Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to In This League
on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Ace. Featuring Bogman.
Oh, the yummy silence. Oh, it tastes so good, you guys.
Oh, he's on tilt. He's full tilt.
And the Welsh.
Nice.
Bogman, let's not overreact.
Do a little bit.
Are you serious?
Make a little pick. Get down tonight.
Nice.
Too high score, is it bad?
Visit InThisLeague.com for full podcasts and more. Coming to your ears now.
That is right. It is In This League. What is happening? I am Chris Welsh, one of your hosts. You can find me on Twitter at IsItTheWelsh. That's Scott Bogman joining me at my side. You can find him at Twitter. You can find him on Twitter at Bogman Sports. Glad to be here. Jam-packed show coming up in literally like a minute. Our boys, Doug Thorburn and Sammy Reed from the Baseballholics Anonymous podcast. And Bogman, we are going to talk about everything under the sun, and it's probably going to get a little bit weird. Let's get weird.
Hey, with four people, it always gets weird.
That's right. In the second hour, Bogman and I, we're going to be covering some basketball talk. We are going to play a little game, the Panic Room, for Fantasy Baseball Warriors. And I'm going to have on James Anderson, who is going to talk some prospects. So if you're into baseball prospects, RotoWire's James Anderson in hour two. Hour one, it's Doug and Sammy. We got basketball. Everything is happening. Let's go.
His next guest, you know, for
ITL. And here we go.
On the ITL guest line now, not one, but two guests, two of our favorite people, Doug Thorburn, Sammy Reed from the Baseballholics Anonymous podcast, and truly a thousand other places, and we will talk about that just here in a minute. Doug, Sammy, what is going on? Let's start with Doug. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm doing really well. Things are crazy. Things are busy. It's mid-baseball season. It's late May. You can't be upset with that.
No, you can't. Sammy, we were a little worried beforehand that we were going to become like Hangover. We were like, where is Doug? Where is Doug? And we're like, I'll be your Doug.
Come on, man. I'll be your Doug.
But he got here. We're all set here. Sammy, how the hell are you doing, man?
I'm doing amazing, man. Baseball season's happening. I'm just grinding it out. Bunch of leagues and a bunch of DFS, so.
Well, we've got
Bob. You're clearly one of the ones that from Fantasy Insiders that won 30 grand, right?
Sam? Yeah. You guys are just spreading that around, right? It's like the Oprah meme. Like, you get 30,000, you get 30,000. It's you too, right, Sammy?
It'd be a lot cooler if it was, man.
What's going on? Yeah, let's start there real quick. Sammy, you can also find his stuff over at Fantasy Insiders. And I've been a part of the Fantasy Insiders frequent me a whole bunch over on Sirius, so I always appreciate that. And a bunch of them are winning some money, some cash money. Why is everybody winning but you, and why is Fantasy Insider so effing cool right now?
You know, I think the thing about FI, so F, I feel like in baseball DFS these days, if you don't have access to like a high powered projection system, you're just way behind the game. And it's a sad thing, but it's true. So FI has the Baseball Info Solutions projection system, which is just, it's so fire, dude. It's like incorporates umpires and weather and just like all this granular minutia that, you know, spits out these projections, and they're really spot on. So a lot of people in FI are like taking stuff down right now.
Okay. Well, we're waiting for you. Like, I want you to be a big winner. I want to celebrate Sammy Reed being a big winner. We'll treat it like swingers. We'll be like, hey, Sammy wins. Sammy's a big winner.
Hey, yes.
Yeah, we'll all go to Vegas and have some, roofie laced Jaeger.
We'll find some beautiful babies.
Time.
Yeah, it'll be a beautiful.
I want to be a beautiful baby. I mean, the only person that like wants me to win money more than me is my fiance. She's like, oh, it's so easy. Like, why don't you do that? I'm like, damn. Like, I need to get that stuff going.
She's like, please justify this ridiculous thing that you people are doing. That's what my wife always said. She's like, do you make some money at this? I'm like, yeah, occasionally. She's like, all right, then you can, I guess you can continue and you can move on with that. Speaking of which, let's go over to Doug here, because Doug, you people can find your stuff, Baseball Prospectus, RotoWire. You're definitely, you've been kind of anointed in the Eno range of like a pitching guy. And most recently, you've just become the marketing director at the National Pitching Association. Please tell me what that is about and what we're going to be finding with you over there.
Yeah, the National Pitching Association, or NPA for short, it's actually where I kind of got started. I worked there for about 5 or 6 years with Tom House.
No big and deal. Tom House.
He's the man, though. I mean, he's the type of guy that will the things he entrusted me when it comes to research and the things we were able to do. I love the fact that he had a truly scientific approach to baseball research. He was willing and eager to prove himself wrong all the time, which I feel like is kind of missing out there. He didn't surround himself with confirmation bias. He wanted to prove himself wrong, and he's gone and spread his stuff to all sorts of sports. He's now like a quarterback guru on top of a pitching guru. We've got a hitting paradigm. I mean, and what's amazing is that the stuff I learned at the NPA, it completely carried for the last 7 or 8 years. I mean, as a sports writer, I was, that's all I was writing about, was the stuff that was still considered advanced stuff. Well, compared to what the NPA is actually doing now, it's way behind. I'm 8 years behind, so I'm just getting back up to speed with where I was 8 years ago. And their new stuff is incredible. It's amazing. So it's such a really fun opportunity. And it's I always say I was kind of behind the curtain before, and then I went on the other side for 7, 8 years, and now I'm back behind the curtain again, and it's amazing.
Doug, you could write a book about Tom House's Nolan Ryan stories, too. That was so much fun when we were hanging out. Just talking about Nolan Ryan and Tom House is amazing.
Or that time he just caught Hank Aaron's 715th home run.
Yeah, or that. No big
deal. Story too.
Do you have a quick Nolan? Can we hear a Nolan Ryan story, like a quick one, real quick?
A quick one is tough. But one of my favorite ones was Nolan was out there. This was like age 44 season or 45 season, and he just went out. And, you know, before the game, they always throw. They have a bullpen. They throw a few, and he's having a crap bullpen. It was just terrible. And he told Tom before the game, he said, Tom, if I wasn't ready for this game, if I hadn't prepared myself, I never should have hired out. I never should have showed up. And Tom didn't even know what that meant. He thought for a second, uh-oh, we need to replace our starting pitcher. So he goes sprinting down the line, goes into the dugout to tell Bobby Valentine, who was the manager at the time, that they need to find a new pitcher because Nolan's not going to go. Next thing he sees Nolan's legs coming down the dugout steps. And first inning, he struck out two batters, average fastball 96 miles an hour, came back in the dugout, and Nolan, and anytime Nolan talks, everyone tends to listen. So Nolan looks down the bench, he says, boys, I'm only going to need one today. And he did it even after a terrible bullpen, just horrific. And Tom had to, he asked him after the game, he said, you know, what was the deal? What happened? You go out there the first inning, teared up, and no, because he ended up actually throwing his seventh no-hitter that day. And he just knew.
Oh, snap.
Nolan just knew. And Tom was trying to figure this out. He's like, how'd you possibly know? He's like, well, Tom, I'd done everything I could have possibly done to prepare for that game. If I had done what was needed, then I shouldn't have even showed up. So I just accepted that, swallowed it, and went after it. And after the first inning, he just felt on. And it was whatever doubt he had in the bullpen, he had completely exited from his mind at that point, and it was just smooth sailing.
That's awesome. And
a gangster.
That is amazing.
That is incredible.
And the stuff that Tom learned from Nolan is amazing because of how he's paid it forward and how he's taught others. It wasn't just a case of Tom teaching Nolan what was going on. This was a veteran Nolan Ryan. This was, you know, he was pitching through like his age 46 season. He was in his 40s when he was with the Rangers. This was very much a mutually beneficial relationship of learning what it takes to pitch baseball.
All right, that was a great introduction, but stick around because right after this break, we will be back with questions for Doug and Sammy on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Be right back. See ya.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
And we're back. It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, joined by Baseballholics Anonymous's Doug Thorburn, Sammy Reed, and we have got a plethora of questions Let's go. Definitely going to open up to both of you, but in a couple of these, we may kind of hone in since, you know, we got a good crowd here. I'm going to start, and Doug, I'm going to start with you. With the incredible rise of DL stints, we've got pitcher injuries just in general. They seem to be up more than ever. There's a really lack of top-end pitching talent. So I ask you, Doug, how many true aces are left in fantasy? Like, how many true, like, I wanted to say, like, SP1, but that's not really what I'm asking. It's how many true aces are left, and then, like, you know, in that, what is the tier one and tier two of starting pitchers? You know, because it was probably a lot different preseason. What does that look like right now?
Yeah, I had eight guys who I considered pretty much above everyone else, and that's, actually, we'll say seven, because Kershaw really deserves his own tier, and he still does. He's not even the ace level. He's some other level that is impossible to attain. So we'll just kind of put him in his own pocket over there. But we've seen Bumgarner go down with a non-baseball injury. We've seen Syndergaard go down. We've seen Arrieta struggle. I mean, we have all these guys who are on my top end who have kind of fallen off. Elite guys left. There's Kershaw. There's Scherzer. There's, let's see, Chris Sale. Chris Sale's killing it right now.
He's amazing.
And he's in Kershaw land, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was gonna say he might be sniffing that tier, that Kershaw tier.
Yeah, he's sniffing
especially
the end of
strikeouts. And I'm a whore for strikeouts. So yeah, I'm completely on board with that. Well, almost on board with that. No one's still in Kershaw's tier. Sorry, he's gotta do a little longer. But not that he's been in terrible the last few years. He's been great, but the Kershaw tier is kind of reserved. He's just so far above everyone else. Like, I did a preseason fantasy ranking. Where I did a point value system for each stat, and his WHIP was so far above everybody else. Everybody else was on a 6-point scale. I went ahead and gave Kershaw 7 points, even though it didn't make sense. It was just he was that far ahead of the rest of the class. It was the only way to make the system make sense. So yeah, I really see those three, and then maybe Yu Darvish. And I'm a big Yu Darvish fan, but honestly, the 11 strikeouts per nine that we saw for the last 3-4 years isn't there right now. So he's not quite pitching at that elite level. But he's right on the cusp going down to tier two.
So I'll go to Sammy here in just 1 second, because I think that's fascinating. And you totally hit where I wanted to kind of cover was you now have a new pitcher that's kind of jumped into tier one with Yu Darvish. Are there any other guys performance-wise that have jumped into tier two? There's plenty of guys with injuries that could have moved out. But, you know, like, and I'm kind of referring, you know, like the Dallas Keuchels of the world, you know, really good early performances. Have anybody jumped into tier two that really weren't kind of close to sniffing tier two preseason for you?
Well, preseason, I was worried about DeGrom's injury issues, and I'm still a little bit worried, especially given the organizational problems that they've had, but he's been excellent. Carlos Carrasco has been amazing. He's someone who was already at the very bottom of Tier 2. Now he's risen to the top of Tier 2. Steven Strasburg was already at the top of Tier 2, but he hasn't done anything to take him out of that spot. Chris Archer has been excellent. I already had him near the top of Tier 2, but he's definitely solidified that. Meanwhile, guys like, I mean, Johnny Cueto hasn't been himself. Verlander's been a bit off. He's weird. He's been like playing two-game hopscotch where every 2 games he's great, and then he sucks for 2 games, and then he has a walk problem for 2 games. And then you've got the David Price issue. Like, there are a lot of guys who are near the top for me who have really struggled this year. So you've got those 3 or 4 in Tier 1. You've got maybe 4 or 5 guys in Tier 2. My top 2 tiers used to be 17 players. Now it's 8 or 9.
See, that's exactly the point. Sammy, when you look at that, I mean, pitching has changed. I keep thinking of 2016, where it was like tier 1A and tier 1B was like 20 guys deep, it felt like. And then we all got the rude awakening of how disappointing starting pitchers were in 2016, let a little bit more value into the players this year, but it's even more disappointing. Sammy, do you agree, disagree? Is there anybody that should be on notice as far as they should be in that tier 1 or they have jumped into tier 2 that we didn't cover?
Yeah, I mean, Doug's tier 1 is exactly the same as mine. It's Kershaw, Sale, Max, and Darvish. And then tier 2, a couple of guys who have jumped in it. You mentioned Dallas Keuchel and Jacob DeGrom. I would also say Garrett Cole and Lance McCullers. I'm really impressed with what they've done. Yeah, man, he's crushing right now. Crushing, and his walk rate's like way down. He's just beasting people up. Love McCullers. And then Garrett Cole, while his strikeout rate hasn't gone up to like that 1 per inning that we saw a couple seasons ago, he's throwing hard. He's hitting his spots. Like, he's basically the pitcher that he was, in my opinion, a couple years ago when we all thought he was a solid tier two guy. So I'm putting him back in.
Okay, last thing, and then I'm going to let Bogman jump in here because he's got a really great question. We talked about this idea with closers with especially with how fluid closers have been, how, you know, the bottom end has kind of been okay, the middle end has really failed, and the top end has failed. In the same respect to starting pitchers and how these tiers have changed, do you think because the gap has closed so much that starting pitcher value is so much more than usual, to the point where a top-end pitcher usually is not going to – you're not going to be able to acquire an equal hitter to the pitcher, you know, because we're always going to value hitters more. But do you think the top-end pitchers are that more valuable that you should ask for the world for those type of guys? Were you Darvish –
exactly what I was going to ask. Oh, okay. That's
yeah.
a great question.
Yeah, where you Darvish would be a top 30 – you know, like let's say he was like 35 overall last year. But now you Darvish, you should be getting like Corey Seager. You should be getting like Anthony Rizzo for Darvish. Why don't we start with you, Doug?
I agree with that. And I think, I mean, pretty much every season, the number one player ends up being a pitcher, and it's a war of attrition. And who's, you know, who's really made that difference or that step up with what we've seen now. And it's the same way with DFS. With DFS, I'd love to look at guys' salaries in a vacuum, but you can't. You have to look at the day's slate. And some days are just horrific, and you have to pay up way above what a guy might be worth on a dollars per fantasy point basis, just because that's the only decent arm there is. You got a bunch of guys who might be negatives that day. And I think the same kind of effect has happened with the starting pitchers. I do think you have to ask for the moon because you can't possibly replace that guy. If you took a Scherzer or a Kershaw or whatever, that this is top two round guys, and now there's half of them. And then those second tier guys, even if you have one or two, yeah, you should ask for the moon for those guys.
What do you think, Sam?
So even someone like Greinke.
What do you think, Sammy?
Yeah, I mean, the dynamic reminds me a lot of what's kind of happened in fantasy football the last couple of years with running backs, right?
Yes.
People are like pushing running backs down, and they're like, just wait on running back because, you know, they all get hurt and we don't know who's going to do good and all that. But if you have the right one, if you have the Le'Veon, the Elliott, you know, the David Johnson, you're like going to win your league because not only are they so much better than everybody else at their position, but they're just such a scarce resource. They're the unicorns of the league. So if you end up with one of them, dude, you're way ahead of the game.
So you think you're going to get like three starting pitchers going in the first round next year because of all the stuff that's going on?
Oh, that's fascinating.
I do. At least Kershaw on sale. At least Kershaw on sale.
Hard
sale
to take Max out of there too. Hard to take Max out of there.
Max is boss, but I mean, he was going on average. I've seen him go in the first, but this year he was going like early to mid second. And then
that's
got a little
skewed. That's only because of the finger injury though, right?
Yeah, I think
the finger injury, he was going, at the end, like 12, between 10 to 14, I would say.
I think like an early look, you could be looking like Kershaw, like two or three, Sale, like between 6 and 8, and Max between 10 and 12. I think that legit is what 2018 drafts are going to look like.
Interesting. Well, and I think it's comparable to, say, 15 years ago when we had these guys who were crazy elite. We had the Randy Johnsons, the Pedro Martinez, the Roger Clemens, or the Greg Maddux. But is at a time where run scoring was going off the chart. So everyone else had this ERA of 4.5. And then you have these guys who are so far, they're lapping the field and then lapping them again. And if we get to more of that type of situation where, wow, there's four or five guys and the drop off to the next tier is so steep, suddenly, yeah, that first round value makes a ton of sense, especially when, like you said, Corey Seager. I like Corey Seager fine, but there's four or five shortstops that I'm cool with. There's not a whole lot of starters, and that's half your stats.
Yeah, it's been brutal. Sammy, it's been popular to do this, and we do it all the time, but we want to know, what hitters are you contrarian on where people are fawning all over them, but you're like kind of like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on this guy. Like, you know, obviously like Jay Bruce, you hate Jay Bruce, but
so much.
Well, that's
so
not
much.
Contrarian. That's just correct. But yeah.
But Aaron Judge has been amazing. Are there any of these hitters that are out to a really nice start who you're like, let's pump the brakes on this guy a little bit?
You know, there's a couple of them, but one guy that I really wanted to talk about that's a little bit different is Trey Turner. And I feel like I have a contrarian take on Turner because I don't think – like, I think if you have Trey Turner, you should sell him and try to capitalize on his, you know, on his name brand, saying, hey,
you
I
also
took
have a contrarian time. Opinion on how to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
He used to be a Padre.
I mean – everybody who leaves the Padres just ends up going somewhere and destroying it. So it's so maddening. And I'm not going to lie, I do kind of root against Trey a little bit because I'm like, hey, dude, you know, I don't want the Padres to look too bad in this whole thing. But I would just say this. I mean, he was getting taken in the first round, right? This is a guy who had a 388 BABIP last year, a 4.3% walk rate, and more power than he'd ever shown in the minors. And all of a sudden, he was getting taken ahead of Goldie in some drafts. He went ahead of, crazy. Like Nolan Arenado, he went above Arenado in tout mix.
That's stupid. Right? Sammy, I don't mean to cut you off, but do you remember, like, focal point. I was the guy with a recorder and microphones at the Fall Stars game.
At the AFL, and you were asking everybody.
And
that
was the question. That was the focal point of the question in November that we did with this, and you were on it, where we were talking about Trey Turner because it was such this crazy, like, divisive thing where people were, like, I remember Colette was talking about kind of, you know, like 10, 11. We were kind of putting players on him. But to think he was going ahead of like guys like Arenado and Goldie is mind-blowing to me.
It's just wild. So for me, like if you have Trey Turner, I still think he'll be an asset in runs and steals. But, dude, he's still got a 3.5% walk rate this year. And so I do think there's other guys that are just like him. Like I would sell him for like third or maybe even fourth round value if your team needed those stats that Trey could bring back.
I was just about to say, Bogman, we should run a couple names. Would you trade Trey Turner for Miguel Sano?
Yes.
Yeah, Sammy was huge on Sano.
I was going to say, you just picked the wrong guy.
Okay. Sammy and I Eric Thames. Would you trade Trey Turner for Eric Thames?
Oh, I would take Thames so much harder than Trey Turner. Absolutely. I mean, Thames is like my guy. Thames is the only guy keeping me alive in like a number of fantasy
Bogman,
leagues.
Help me here. I'm picking all the wrong players here. Would you trade?
You're seriously, it's like a who's who of Sammy's favorite guys.
What about Ryan Braun?
No, I would keep Trey over Ryan Braun.
Okay, yeah, that's from the other pile. That Sammy's not a fan.
Where was the middle? Doug, help us.
First off, Ron is such an asshole. So, I mean, like he's just such a shady.
We just become best friends.
I think so. Okay. Buster Posey.
I would rather have Trey.
I want to find your middle ground. That's really what's important here is I need to
Sano,
find.
Sano is really close. Sano is really
close. How about Giancarlo Stanton?
I would take Stanton.
That's the point right there.
Is it? Where do you lean?
I don't know. I mean, that's the one where I'm stumped. You know, I take Trey over Cespedes. The easy cop out answer is if you needed power, you'd want Stanton. If you needed the other stuff, you'd have Trey. But I think he's like the value equivalent of Trey. Yeah. Hey, I got a hot take for you guys, pitching wise.
Oh, let's hear it.
Spit the hot take.
Here we go. I'm buying Alex Wood as a top 25 starter
in the major leagues. Get out of here.
Not joking you, bro. Alex Wood right now is the starting pitching equivalent of Zach Britton. He's first in ground ball rate, and he's sixth in strikeout rate.
So he'll get
he's
hurt
got the
soon.
lowest hard-to-hit percentage. Doug and I kind of talked about him on our latest Baseball Holics pod, and he has really improved his mechanics, like night and day from 2 years ago to today. You see this stuff on Brooks Baseball. He's getting almost a foot more of horizontal extension from his pitching arm. He's turned the corner, man. I'm fully in on Alex Wood.
How many games is he going to start, though?
Well, I figure the Dodgers will put him on the 10-day DL at least twice, just to skip starts. So
name is DL. Alex DL Wood.
I got a hot take. What if you took Alex Wood and Rich Hill, made them one pitcher? Would they be better than Clayton Kershaw?
Yeah, pretty equal. That's the break-even point.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right. That's what I thought. Okay, that's a great
If you want to get contrarian, I can – even though I heard all this from Sam, he did a deep dive on Wood. Actually, he usually does hitters, but he jumped in on pitchers on the podcast we just posted today for our extract. And so he really diagnosed everything with Wood. And even with the improvements he's made, in my opinion, he's still a mechanical mess. I still won't trust it. I wouldn't dare put him in the top 25. I have no idea what he'll do next. I think what he's done up till now is awesome, but I certainly won't trust it. And so at least I'm contrarian against Sammy on that one.
I love
it. Sent it in the ranks.
Yeah, these are great. All right, next question here. Let's go back to Doug here, and let's actually talk about some mechanical stuff. Mechanically, what is wrong, or is there something mechanically wrong with Tanaka and Tehran? Those two single-handedly are destroying Bogman. Bogman is going to get diabetes because he made a bet with Howard Bender, and he's going to have to eat tons of peeps. Yeah, well, you're going to continue.
Not because of the peeps, but
that'll just be the thing.
Probably the straw that broke the camel back.
I thought you said peach.
No, peeps. They made a peeps bet because Howard is famous for eating like hundreds of peeps on Easter, and we had him on a week before, and Bogman made a bet of Tanaka versus Dallas Keuchel. And Bogman's ready to just give in now. So
yeah, I'm just asking people to send me the peep so I don't have to buy them.
Yeah, exactly. So mechanically, Doug, or really anything here, talk to us about what's going on with Tanaka and Tehran. Two very popular mid-round, like high tier three type of pitchers coming into this year. What's wrong with them?
With Tanaka, it's not so much mechanical as I see it's it being a command issue. And yes, command and it does stem back to pitching mechanics. But with his issue, with his specific command issues, he's just off by a little bit. And this is a guy who's been incredibly consistent throughout his career. But where we're really seeing it is with his split finger fastball. That thing used to be a trapdoor split. He would get guys swinging over the top of it all the time. And he pretty much never gave up homers. In fact, the most homers he had ever given up on a split was three in a full season. He's already given up four this year. That pitch is just not diving below the zone the way it used to. He's not getting the same downward motion on it. And for him, that's devastating because he's never thrown hard. He's been a guy who relies on hitting pretty precise spots and then dropping that trap door and getting guys to swing over the top. Well, all of a sudden, that trap door is not fooling anybody. Its timing is not different enough from the fastball.
Especially
and guys are connecting.
Dickerson. Didn't fool Dickerson at all yesterday.
Oh, my. Oh, dude, that thing went at least 615 feet. StatCast said like 442, and I'm like, that's BS.
Lies. Lies. Fake news.
That thing's in Fort Lauderdale.
What about Julio? Is a lot of it Julio's new ballpark? I know he's had some bad luck in his new ballpark.
With Julio, I think it is mechanical, and he's always been an interesting one in the sense that if you pause it at the right point, he looks ridiculous, and he always has. He like splays his arms and his legs halfway through his stride, so he looks like he's posing like an X. It looks ridiculous, but he's usually able to straighten it out. But you see a guy who obviously his performance has been terrible, but then when you look at his delivery game to game, it's all about where he's starting and where he's directing his energy. And this is something that basically is what plagued Berríos last year and what Berríos is not doing this year. So with Tehran, he's an extreme first base side of the rubber guy, despite being right-handed. And in the past, he's always stayed to that first base side of the rubber. He's always, even though he had a close stride, his foot landed to the first base side of the center line. So he stayed lined up with that left side of the plate. It just worked with his signature. Well, now he's striding so far across that he's crossing over the center line, and he can't get the ball to the glove side as well. He's missing to the arm side over and over again. And this is a major issue. It's a small little tweak, and yet it affects him on every single pitch he throws. So this is a guy who, mechanically, I do see a big issue, and it could change game to game. And it's amazing how quickly someone can hone something like that and smooth out their ankles, but it could take them a while at the same time. So it's
can you send him a tweet for me? Just tweet him and say and tell him how to fix it so that I could have a decent team. In our long-term league, I've been bad for the last 2 years. I made all these trades.
Who's been really good in that league, Bogdan?
Drafted Tehran. Drafted Tehran. And it's just not working out for me. It's been terrible. I just need him to get so much better, and it's not going to happen.
We're going to play a quick game of buy or sell. We've got a pairing of players for each of you, and then we're going to go to player debate. So you don't have to – you're more than welcome to throw a couple, you know, nuggets in of information on the guys, but you don't have to go anything crazy because we'll just kind of blow through these. And, Doug, I am going to start with you, and then, Bogman, you're going to lay Sammy's out. And I'm going to lay the player and the projected area where he could be. First up, Doug Thorburn. Lance McCullers as a top 12 starting pitcher rest of season, buy or sell that?
Man, that is aggressive. And going into the year, I thought I was the high man on McCullers, and I had him at like 29 or something like that. But you know what? Looking at the decimation of the guys, the list of guys above him, I buy it.
Yes.
I love McCullers. I love his delivery. I like his very powerful delivery. He also has altered his arm action. He used to dip he had a really long arm path, and he used to dip his arm really low or dip his hand really low. And when a guy makes an alteration to arm action, it usually takes a while to get down. To see how quickly he made the improvements necessary, and now he's slashed his walk rate while taking away one of his biggest injury scares, at least from his pitching coach's perspective. There's so much to like here. So I'm all for, and I'm completely on the McCullers bandwagon this year.
You know what I love too about that one is if future us or, you know, past us was told, hey, Lance McCullers would be a top 15 overall starting pitcher and he's not the best Astros pitcher, everyone would laugh in your face because of Dallas Keuchel's kind of fall. All right, next one.
You guys want to hear, I'm sorry to interrupt, yeah. You want to hear something crazy? You know Ryan Spader, the ace of MLB it's stats?
That guy, right.
So last year he predicted that in the preseason that DJ LeMahieu would win the batting title. He won it. And then this offseason he said that Lance McCullers would be the AL Cy Young winner.
Well, I got to tell you, the leftovers would probably claim him as a god, and they would write a book about him. That's amazing. That's incredible. I like that. Doug.
Let's hang up with these guys and get him on.
Yeah, let's get him on. Yeah, exactly.
That's the way optimal play.
Doug, James Paxton finishes as a top 15 starting pitcher rest of season.
For me, this is more of a sell, and that's acknowledging that he has made huge mechanical increases. In fact, at first I was looking at just his improvements from 2015 to 16. He used to have this really big point the glove up to the sky type delivery while the back the throwing arm dropped way back behind him, and he's slowly lowered that glove hand a little bit, and he's now at the point where his delivery looks awesome. His stability, his balance, his posture. All that said, this guy has never pitched more than 121 innings in a season. I've still seen a lot of inconsistency from him. And so I can't see him having the consistency necessary or the innings necessary to finish top 15.
All right. I love it. Two more. David Price finishes the season as a top 30 starting pitcher. Buy or sell?
I got to sell that. I really like David Price. I own way too many shares because I was optimistic this year or at least in draft season. And I'm still optimistic, but again, to hit top 30, that requires volume as well as performance on the rate stats. And right now, we don't know what we're going to get from him performance-wise when he does show up on the mound. We still don't know when he's going to show up on the mound. And he's going to be 2 months behind when he does. So it's going to be very hard for him to crack that top 30 status.
All right, I did not attach a top whatever to this player, but do you buy the mechanical changes that has this guy throwing 99 with all the movement in the world? Charlie Morton!
Well, what's funny is, now, he was actually my extract, so it's funny we cover Morton. On Baseballholics, the one that I posted today. And with Morton, he hasn't made huge mechanical changes, at least when you compare 2015 to 2017. Now, 2016, he was a complete mess. He was he pitched like 17 innings. He was injured in like 15 different ways. He altered the mechanics to compensate for the injuries. So I kind of throw that one away. I really look at the 2015, 2017. But the guy's gained 5 miles an hour. But
it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's insane. It's insane. He averaged 92, 92 and a half. Now he's averaging 97 easy.
He drank from the right holy grail.
It's crazy. Your guy, the Fantasy Insider guys had me on. It's the most sheepish I've felt about something where they asked me about Charlie Morton preseason. And I was so dismissal of it because I was like, this dude has never thrown this hard ever in his career. Why would I buy on Charlie Morton at this stage in his career? And if he's throwing this hard, he's going to blow out his arm. So, I mean, it's amazing.
But what's really interesting about it is what he's lost. So he's gained all these miles an hour. Mechanically, he's made a slight change. His timing has changed a little bit where his trigger of trunk rotation. So it's basically when the arm acceleration process starts. So imagine that you're hitting. Your front foot has to come back in contact with the ground before you actually start your swing. Same thing with pitching. You don't actually start throwing until front foot comes to contact the ground. And there's a delay between when that front foot comes to contact and when he actually triggers. And in Morton's case, he's actually increased that delay. So he's changed his timing a bit. That's given him a little more torque. That's part of the reason he's thrown a bit harder. But that's not enough to explain how much he's throwing harder. And I went into it a little bit deeper today. I looked up to see what was going on and as far as whether there were other explanations, because I offered on the podcast and said that there must be something conditioning wise or nutrition or something.
Or needle.
And sure
or
enough.
Needle. Yeah.
Oh, the cream and the clear.
What'd you find, Doug? Did you find some prescriptions? What'd you find?
Well, sure enough, at least he claims that he rededicated himself conditioning wise, that when it comes to nutrition, he actually made that a focal point. And sure enough, he mentioned his timing with his delivery. So he's got a few different aspects there. However, there's a downside. And that is, with throwing harder, he's lost all of his vertical drop on all of his pitches. He used to be a guy who had really strong. He was like in the 70th percentile for vertical drop on every single pitch he threw. Now he's in like the 30th percentile of all those pitches. He's throwing harder and he's lost that vertical drop. So when guys do time the pitch well, they hammer it. So I just kind of see more of the same. It's going to look much differently, but the results could be more of the same. So I'm still very skeptical on Morton, even though I buy into the velocity being somewhat legit.
I like it.
Right. I just listening to Doug talk about mechanics makes me wish I was a mechanic expert. The only mechanic expert I am is fork to mouth mechanics.
Sammy, we got to analyze that path. I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, it's just fast and aggressive and a lot for me. That's my fork mechanic style. Sammy, we got some hitters for you. Buy or sell. And Conforto finishing as a top 15 outfielder for the rest of the season. He has been absolutely mashing.
Dude, the thing about Conforto, if you look at his pull to center field and then oppo, both opposite field and pull are at 25.8%, and in the middle is 48.3%. He just sprays it perfectly around the yard. The guy was a, 400, 500 guy in the minor leagues. He hit 330. He's 11th in the league in barrel percentage. I think he's like one of the GOAT hitters out there right now. I'm buying him.
He's like the Peter North of outfielders right now, just spraying it
sprays it all over the place.
It's amazing. All right.
I knew I couldn't get that one past you. Sorry. I knew that would not.
I derailed us. I've had a lot of whiskey tonight, so I've derailed us.
What about Jake Lamb finishing as a top five third baseman?
Love it.
So this is really, really tough for me because Jake Lamb is another one of the Sammy Reed brand guys who I just loved more than anything. Mm-hmm. But there's so many other really great third basemen. I still like Miguel Sano over him. I like Nolan Arenado over him. Machado. I think when Josh Donaldson comes back, I would rather have Donaldson than Rake Lamb. So I'm going to say I'm very optimistic and I love him, but I'm not sure that his batting average is going to keep him in that game. So I think
my real question is Lamb versus Seager.
It's always, I swear to God, our podcast exists to be Jake Lamb versus Kyle Seager. That is our life force for 2017.
Are you guys on opposite ends of the spectrum?
No. We're both Diamondback fans, but we've both hard-headedly agreed that like paying top, like 65 or 70 for Kyle Seager seemed dumb when you could get Jake Lamb at 110. And offensively, he might surpass. Just Kyle Seager was a floor guy, where Lamb seemed to have a little bit higher on the ceiling. So we're both Lamb guys, but it always comes back to Kyle Seager versus Jake Lamb.
On Yahoo, Seager was 44 and Jake Lamb was 147 preseason rank.
Oh yeah, I'm going Lamb hard in that contest. And the other sneaky thing about Lamb is that the Diamondbacks are stealing so much this year. Mm-hmm. Jake Lamb quietly has three bags right now. And I think he probably ends the season with 8 or 9. Seager doesn't really run, so I think that's a hidden little value there.
I love when guests talk about Diamondbacks Bogman because we're not allowed to.
Yeah, we're not allowed to. We talk about him too much, we've been told.
Yeah.
totally. Elvis Andrus is a 15 homer, 20 stolen base guy at the end of the year. He's on pace for both right now.
Ooh, buy or sell?
I'm gonna sell that one. And the reason is because of the home runs. This guy steals 20, 25 like clockwork, but his career high is 8. Right now it's 5. So it's like, has he developed more power? Has he developed more lift? Well, if you look at his StatCast stuff, it's really not that impressive, right? His average fly ball right now, I mean, it goes 175 feet on average, which is like worse than 150th in the league. You know what I mean? So for me, I really do like Andrus. I think he has made some changes in his swing. His fly ball rate is like close to his career high, but I'm still selling that. I think he ends with like 10 or 12.
Okay. Mark Reynolds will be a 280 hitter at the end of the season. He is hitting 329 right now.
So my initial thought was this is an easy sell. This dude is a 237 career hitter. Like, absolutely not. And then I started like doing the math, right? And I'm like, okay, so what he needs to do is hit he's got to hit like 282 the rest of the year or something like that to get to his career average. And I mean, the reality is his strikeout rate, this is a guy who owns the major league record for strikeouts in a season. His strikeout rate right now is 22.7%, almost league average.
It's amazing.
So if you're making that much contact and you're playing half your games in Coors Field, to be honest, I think he can do that the rest of the way and keep that average around 280 for the rest of the year. I think the number I was looking at, he needs to hit like 254 the rest of the season. I think he can do that.
Bye.
What about last one here? Starlin Castro is a 300 hitter. He's hitting 352 right now, but he hasn't hit 300 since 2011.
Yeah, this was almost the exact same case where my initial thought was no. And then I started doing the math and I'm like, oh, snap, this could actually happen. He's the one that needs to hit 282 the rest of the way to stick at 300. And to be honest, I mean, that's his career average. So if he just hits as well as he has in his career, he'll hit 300 aggregate for the season. So I'm buying that.
I'd also throw out a little tiny thing. What if Gleyber Torres in July gets called up, pushes Didi Gregorius a little bit, and there's a little bit of a little round table that's going on, even easier for Starlin Castro to hit that 300. Just speculate.
Oh, I hope that happens, man. I want to see Torres this year.
Just called up to AAA. I think you
will. Be Peter Northing it all over the place.
I will be all over everywhere, and everyone will know about it.
All right, stick around, because right after you're sprayed down by these advertisers, we will be right back on the Fantasy Sports.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, final segment of this hour. Sammy Reed, Doug Thorburn, Scott Bogman, myself. Time for some player debates. All right, gentlemen, player debates, how it works. We are just pitting player versus player, and you're going to pick rest of season which one you want, and we want to make it hard. This first one is beautiful because the purveyor, the creator of the C. Dick term, which we completely stole and made a shirt out of, and you own. You are a full supporter of the C. Dick shirt that we have.
That is correct.
It's pretty awesome, right?
It's extremely awesome. I'm just happy, you know, I'm just happy that this has happened. You know, you guys made shirts, and our boy Yancey Eaton has, like, become famous for C. Dick. Like, his mentions just blow up anytime C. Dick goes yak. And he's done it, what, like 11 times this year? Like, Antsy's Twitter is just going crazy.
I know. I wish we should. I mean, like, if we were, like, good people, we would have, like, sent you one. But we need people to buy them. So, you know, just you need to push that out a little bit. Sell a little bit more, and we'll send you another one. But I think this is a really interesting one. And we'll start with you, and then we'll go to Doug, and then Bogman and myself. Corey Dickerson, who is having an incredible season, an incredible season for anybody, but especially for him, versus Chris Davis with the Oakland A's, the 40 home run potential masher who is never really high on the average. Sammy, I ask you, rest of season, who do you want, Chris Davis or Corey Dickerson?
All right. Well, look, if Yancey's listening to this, mute it right now.
Yes.
I love C. Dick so much, but I have to go with Chris Davis here. Like, so this year, he's fourth in exit velocity.
Chris Davis.
Yeah, Chris Davis from the different. Oakland A's.
Yeah, not Crush.
We're talking about the other Chris.
Oh, the Chris with the K, but I call him Crush. I just spell it with a K-H, you know.
Like Kush. Okay, Kush Davis, we'll call him, yeah.
Sorry, dude, I wasn't reading the transcript.
and he's smoking it, man. Listen, this guy was fourth in baseball in fly ball and line drive exit velocity and third in barrels. And so it's kind of hard to know, is this predictive? But last year, he was second and sixth in those two categories. He hit 42 bombs last year, 102 RBIs, and he's on pace for 48 home runs this season. I love C. Dick, but I think Crush is a lock to hit 40. I don't think C. Dick is, and I think they're both going to be pretty even on average when all said and done.
I like it. It's a tough one, though, right, Sammy?
That's a tough one. It's really tough. Dickerson has, like, just jumped himself into that conversation.
All right, Doug, what do you think? Corey Dickerson versus Chris Davis rest of season.
Yeah, I disagree. I would go with C. Dick on this one.
Wow.
And my brand is getting killed right now.
And I love the homers and all, but there's a whole lot of extra categories. And with Chris Davis, he doesn't have much of a surrounding cast. His batting average has never been strong. It's 224 right now. It's been in the 240s the last 3 years. So you know you're going to take a hit on batting average. He's not going to score runs. His best bet is to drive them in, and his lineup isn't really going to be a big help for that. Meanwhile, C. Dick's batting leadoff. He's scored 29 runs already. So you're looking at a guy who, even if his homers settle in the 25-30 range, I think he's going to score more runs. I think he's got 22 RBI despite batting leadoff. So I think his RBI will be at least it'll be a lot closer to Chris Davis's count than the runs will be. I think the average will be significantly higher, and not just because Dickerson's hitting 343 right now, but he has a 286 career average. So I think he's going to be an improvement in multiple categories, and I'm willing to find home runs elsewhere.
Dude, we gotta do like a Twitter Abby bet for rubies for C. Dick versus
rubies
Chris Davis the rest of the season.
Let's do it. We'll put it up for the episode. Chris Davis
lit
versus Chris Davis versus Corey Dickerson. I love it. Bogman, all right, we're split here. Where are you gonna go?
Corey Dickerson is mashing. He's hitting 98 points better than last year. His BAP is over 100 points higher than it was last year and 60 points higher than his career average. I don't think he's going to keep it up. But we've seen a similar season in 2014. He hit 24 homers and had a 312 average. The reason people didn't believe it is because he's playing for the Rockies at that point. And last season, he hit 245. But this looks like the classic Ron Chandler. Once a player demonstrates a skill, he owns it. And Dickerson owns batting average and power. Karis Davis, I think his problem is he's not swinging enough this year. His swing rate this year is 44% compared to 52% last year. I think people are complaining about the strikeouts for him too much or something. So I'm going to go with C-Dick on this one. I'm taking C-Dick Dong.
R.I.P. my brand.
Wow, I know. No kidding. I'm amazed. Bogman does this all the time where he spends his entire allotted time talking about a player and then he goes, but I'll take the other guy. Like, he does it all the time. So I thought that was happening.
I just talked about Corey Dickerson the whole time and then took Corey Dickerson.
No, I know. I'm saying I'm shocked that you did that.
Slow roll him.
Yeah, you do that all the time where you slow roll and then you take the other player, but you didn't do that this time. Corey Dickerson is really interesting. The slugging percentage, it's almost like 200% higher. He's pacing out to beat his career in doubles, his career in triples. It's a phenomenal pace he's at right now. But a 393 BAPIP is about 60 points higher than he's ever done in his entire career. Even in Coors. And Karis Davis is down about 40% on his BAPIP than his career. He's upped his walk percentage of strikeouts. We'll deal with that. We'll deal with that with Karis Davis. I'm going to have to go with Sammy here.
Sharp.
Yeah, I got to go with Karis Davis. I think what Corey Dickerson is doing is fantastic, and he's a must-own player at this point. And I think at the end of the season, it's going to be very difficult. It's like the math that Sammy was doing. He would probably have to hit like 210 the rest of the season to be under 300, and that's not going to happen. He's having a renaissance of a year, but at the end of the day, I'm going to take the elite power. We can find power everywhere, which is definitely a correct statement, but elite power in the 40 range, I think it's going to be 35 to 40, and Karis Davis is definitely prone to almost like the Justin Upton kind of streaky range. I think he'll have one of those months where he puts up like 9 and we'll get close to 40. So we're going to break it even. I'm going to go with Sammy and I'm going to go with Karis Davis. Bogman, what's
more
number
homers
two?
Or singles for Karis Davis at the end of the year?
Oh, that's a good question.
13 homers and 17 singles right now.
How many singles does he have right now? He has 17.
17 singles and 13 homers. So
I'll go with singles. He had 69, by the way, last year. Nice.
Doug,
I was going to say that Upton comment basically put me even more in the camp.
That's a good point. That's a good point, Doug. That's a great point.
Doug and Bogman will be on Dear Mr. Fantasy next week. And, no way that the Welsh and Sammy will be after making fun of Corey. How about this one, boys? Andrew Triggs versus Jose Berríos. Doug, we'll start with you on this one.
Oh, this is unfair because Triggs is an MPA guy. He really got his start with a camp with Tom House at an MPA camp. This was several years ago after he'd already undergone Tommy John.
And that one time basically at MPA camp.
Well, and he's obviously continued as an MPA guy. But he's someone who's exceeded expectations basically every step of the way. That said, I love Berríos. I would definitely take Berríos. I'm such a fan. You could have put a lot of guys who have much bigger and more impressive names than even Triggs does, and I still would have taken Jose Berríos.
How about this one? How about real quick? Berríos or Tanaka?
Berríos.
Oh, that is the hottest take. Oh, my hands just burnt. My ears just got on fire.
You notice how little time I took to...
Oh, my God.
He snap called Berríos.
Yeah, I mean, the guy who explains it, too, he's just Berríos.
That's my favorite moment we've ever
had. I'm all in, I call.
I'm all in. That was a poker moment. That was fantastic. All right, Sammy, you're up. Beat that.
I can't. I'm just... I've been podcasting with Doug for years, and the moment he saw Berríos years ago, he said, this guy's going to be a star. This guy's going to be amazing. He got me on board like super, super early. We own an NFBC team together at Draft and Hold, and Berríos was like one of his favorite picks somewhat late, and he's come up. He's doing really good. I think Triggs is fine, but the reality is he has an 18.5% strikeout rate. I think he's okay, and I think Berríos could be special, so I will take Berríos as well.
Yeah, I'm going to jump on this. I mean, Andrew Triggs has been a really popular name. You know, I mean, Eno's been a big fan of him. He's statistically, you know, he's been a positive force in, especially the A's always seem to do this. A's always seem to bring up, you know, a couple guys that are really good that we're looking for. He didn't have a good outing today. He gave up 5. You know, he kind of got a little bit wonky. Did strike out 7. I'm a fan of Triggs. I think Triggs is going to borderline being an ownable player in 12-man for the rest of the season. But like you guys have said, I'm a huge Barrios fan. Yeah, Barrios for a long time for me. He is, I mean, he's rocking about an 8.8 K per 9 right now. But I mean, when this guy gets his feet under him, he's going to be a 9-plus type of guy. I actually liken him very similarly to like a Chris Archer type of guy because he can have those blow-up games of walks, even though he's rocking like a 1, you know, walk per 9. It can get away from him. You know, in 2016, it was 5. He might be more of a 2.5 walk per 9 type of guy. So I like him a lot like Chris Archer, and I love Chris Archer. So this is easily Jose Barrios to me, and taking away from the hot hand that has been Andrew Triggs outside of tonight. Bogman, do you feel any different, or are you sweeping it?
No, I'm going to sweep it. I mean, this one is a little more difficult for me. I feel like the Welsh picked this one because I've been the guy that's saying that I'm less of a K whore than I used to be.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
But I mean, these guys, the XFIP is right around the same. And if the XFIP is the same, I'm going to wind up going with the guy who has the potential for more strikeouts. And in most cases, that's Jose Barrios. You know, the pedigree is there, obviously. So I'm going to take Barrios with this one. I think you guys have nailed the points home.
Okay. This is
perfect. That slider is just, it's not suitable for work. I love that slider. It's insane.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny too, because I think it would have been a highly contested debate preseason of Julio Urias versus Jose Barrios. And Urias had a clear path and dude just sent down, you know, and Barrios is here.
Doug is a big Urias guy too.
Oh yeah. I would have been prior to the season. I would have said Urias. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you got Barrios just rocking it out. All right, here's the last one. This is a really interesting one. This is one Bogman put together. And Bogman, we're going to start with you, and then we'll go to me, and then we will finish with both of our guests. We'll go to Doug, and then we'll finish with Sammy here. Giancarlo Stanton, big power Giancarlo Stanton, knock on wood, has actually been playing so far this whole season, unlike most of the Major League Baseball, versus Will Myers, who is really another offshoot of Ian Happ, who is just a resting bitch face type of player who's just never happy about anything. You were salty. Oh. You were really
you
salty.
See Doug Peralta, Doug Peralta, David Peralta swiped that homer from him yesterday.
It's a beautiful thing. Nice. Yeah, I bet he did, you know, like kicked a puppy after. Will Myers, Giancarlo Stanton, Bogman, what do you think?
Stanton is having a typical Stanton season, a little bit better batting average than last year. He's hitting homers a little better clip, but basically all of his stuff is the same. His underlying numbers are pretty much the same. He's in line with being Giancarlo Stanton. Will Myers is having a weird season. He's hitting .281. He also has 11 homers, 4 stolen bases to Stanton's none. He has an unsustainable homer to fly ball rate at 23.9%. His career is 15.5. He's also had a career low walk percentage and a career high swinging strike rate. So I expect regression across the board for Myers. So I'm going to take Stanton, which actually kind of surprised me when I put this together. I feel like I'm turning on Will Myers a bit because I really didn't like him coming into the year because his second half numbers were so bad. But I feel like the home run derby is really what sank him in the second half last year. But, you know, if you're putting guys that are close together, I want the guy in the better lineup. It's not like the Marlins have such a better lineup, at least in runs. But if I have to choose a lineup to improve, it will not be the San Diego Padres this season. So I'm going to take Stanton. I'm going to hope that, you know, what Joe Pisapia says, all his injuries are really weird freak injuries, happens, and he plays the rest of the year. So to my own surprisement, I am taking Giancarlo Stanton.
Okay. They are Doug Thornburn. They are Sammy Reed, both putting theys to them. With the Fantasy Baseball Holics Anonymous podcast, which you should immediately go and subscribe and make sure you're listening to if you are not. Sammy Reed, Doug Thornburn, we love you guys.
Thanks for having us, man.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right, there you go. Want to give big thanks to the Baseball Holics Anonymous crew, Doug and Sammy. They are fantastic. What a great hour. If you missed any of it, make sure to go back and listen on demand on the fantasysportsnetwork.com/radio, or you can find the rest of the conversation we had on our podcast at inthisleague.com, or just go search ITL Fantasy Baseball on iTunes. You can get the whole shebang. There's a whole lot more. Trust me. Hour one in the books. Hour two right around the corner. We're talking basketball. We're talking baseball prospects. And we are going to see how much Bogman and I are panicking with the panic room. Don't go anywhere. It's Bogman the Welsh on In This League on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's hour two of In This League right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Glad to be here. You missed a whole lot if you missed hour one. I suggest you go back, listen on demand, fantasysportsnetwork.com/radio. You can get hour one. You can go on iTunes and search In This League. Or if you want to find the podcast version, where there's a lot of shenanigans that happen in the podcast versions. We played an old bit in celebration of Chris Cornell, who passed, and it was an old bit Bogman and I did where he did impressions, and really it's just a bunch of madness. So go and check out the podcast. ITL Fantasy Baseball, search on iTunes or anywhere, and InThisLeague.com is where you can find everything out about us if you'd like to know. I don't know if you heard, but the basketball playoffs are still going on. The Rockets are out, so I don't know if you still pay attention.
I pay attention to former Texas players, and Avery Bradley nailed that game-winning three for the Celtics the other night.
Okay. So you're finding the upside. We can appreciate that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wanted to get your take on a couple fronts here. Is basketball the most predictable, least exciting, and just tune in for the fine point? It's like it's like the 140 character version of sports. You know what I mean? Like, you just need the highlights. It's the Sports Center. What I mean by that, there's a thousand comments a day of basketball is rigged. You know, how convenient the Lakers got the second overall pick.
Well,
how convenient. Not that everybody saw that coming, right?
Well, I mean, I don't want to call it rigged, but wow, look at that. You're Boston and L.A. get the first two picks. What a surprise.
Yeah.
Phoenix slides to four.
Yeah, I know. Big shocker. And then you have an injury Nancy Kerrigan situation of two of the best players on the not best teams in the playoffs getting knocked out. Not that anybody hurt them physically with a bat or anything like that. But I'm saying Kawhi Leonard hurt. Isaiah Thomas out. Garbage series. Absolute going to be garbage series. Then all of a sudden, the Celtics pull off, you know, game two, and everyone's back in. I heard somebody talking. It was almost like Adam Silver called LeBron and was like, yo, Bron, ratings.
Game one.
Ratings. Click. You know what I mean? And just like, let's extend this a little bit more. And it just got me thinking, I don't know, man. Like, I'm a sports nut. But really, I feel like I can just tune in to the playoffs at game five, and then I can start to enjoy it because it's stupid. It's Warriors and it's Cavs again. Well, there's no parity in basketball anymore. Every other sport is representing parity. Teams come and they go. Dynasties kind of create, but it's nothing like basketball, where literally every person looks like a genius, quote unquote, because in the playoffs they said, hey, Warriors Cavs in the championship game. Well, guess what? I mean, that's where we're headed, and that's the obvious point.
Well, no one looks like a genius anymore, because it's just so easy to see right from the beginning. Is, you know, and I talked about this with Joe Pisapia before. It's part of the reason he doesn't like basketball, is because you start the year, you just know who's going to be in the finals. Like, unless something happens to LeBron, or, you know, I could say something happens to Curry, but they still have Durant over there. So unless something happens to LeBron, it's going to be, you know, Cavs and Warriors at the end of the year. And it's really not that big of a surprise. I kind of think that I want to go back to this rig thing with the NBA draft. Do you think they should just go back to, you know, or go to, I don't know if they've ever done it before, just worst record?
Yeah, I personally do. I think the lottery's
so
a joke. It's stupid. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's the stupid golf ball or ping pong ball situation. Like, that shouldn't decide the course of a franchise. Oh, hey, the Cavs just happened to get LeBron James. That's interesting, with the number one pick that year. Oh, look, Lonzo Ball only wants to play for the Lakers. What a surprise that the Lakers got the second overall pick. I mean, I know there's plenty, and I know it's stupid, and it's like, you know, oh, it's not really done like this. But it's that correlation of, like,
it gives you, but doesn't it give you question, though? Like, it's one of those things that they should get rid of it, because it's like, you know, everyone is questioning it. You know, if the league isn't rigged, then just do the right thing and get rid of these ping pong balls.
You know, there's a lot of stuff here, because you've got, and I don't think this isn't groundbreaking news here, but there's a correlation to the amount of players on a team and in a league to the amount of parity that's involved. Basketball, there's like 12 players on the court, and really there's like 9 players that are actually making an impact on a team. And guess what? The least parity exists in basketball because, you know, they're sticking longer. The teams, you know, there's not enough people with their hands to make a change, where then you get baseball,
right?
There's 25 players. You know, one player isn't the decimation of a franchise necessarily. You know, the Cardinals, they weren't decimated because Pujols left. Football, there's freaking 40 plus, you know, that are out there, and it's a crapshoot. Obviously, there are
teams
that
you can add a top 10 player to any crappy team in baseball or football, and they could easily not make the playoffs. You can't do that in basketball. You add a top 10 player to a team, and unless they get hurt, that team is going to the playoffs.
Yeah, and what's funny about this is it translates to, and I'm going to be careful how I say all this here because I love fantasy basketball, but it translates to fantasy basketball where, I don't know, man, you and I did a deep dive on our ITL fantasy basketball podcast where we were looking at the end of the season. I think we had Jonas Nader on from Roto World. We were looking at the rankings, and there were only like three players. Or no, we did this with Dan Bespris actually not too long ago at hoop-ball.com. There were like three players who finished outside of the top 50 that were like 20 or more spots differential from the ranking. So what I mean by that is like a guy that was 10 overall maybe finished, you know, 29, a guy that finished 4, or you know, that was preseason 4, finished like 7. There were only three guys that were had a discrepancy of 20 spots difference in their rank. And what I mean by all saying all this is like it's just like there's no surprise. Like guys are all finishing kind of where you think they are. All teams are kind of finishing all where you think you're. It kind of takes the fun out of it in fantasy basketball. If you don't go get, you know, if you don't have your, you know, your stud at the top, everyone's kind of even. In real basketball, all the same teams are going. We should actually have pulled up like the records to last year to this year. How much different? How different were the actual with the playoffs, the teams that made the playoffs this year to last year in basketball?
Yeah, I agree with you, but I don't know if I agree with you on the point of it makes it not as fun because it's like, would you rather? Okay, football versus basketball. If you kind of want to go there, football seems like it's almost a crapshoot. You take whoever and. If it works for you, if it works, if it doesn't, it doesn't. And that's kind of it, right? But in basketball, it seems like you can plan out your first three rounds and kind of know what you're getting. If you take zero risk, right, the only risk you have, it seems, is injury risk. You don't have those big swings. Like when we were looking with Dan, the big thing was Oladipo. Like if you took a risk on Oladipo, it was kind of stupid. Because if you, and that's what I did this year. That's why I didn't win any leagues this season, is because I was taking Oladipo all over the place because I believed in him, but he wasn't a proven player. So I kind of feel like if you just stay away from risky things early, like top three or four rounds in basketball, you can put a pretty solid team together, but you need to take that risk around 4 or around 5 or else because everyone else can do the same strategy, I guess is what I'm saying.
There was a time where I would kind of stand here and say like fantasy basketball actually might be my favorite fantasy sport because fantasy football would be super frustrating. You know, you lose. I guess when you talk about this kind of parity conversation, you lose your, you know, your first round guy in fantasy football and you might be done. You might be done for the years or, you know, you just miss on your running backs and you're kind of done. Where fantasy baseball, you really have a chance for many, many months to kind of work through and make things happen. Fantasy basketball at one time kind of held there. I don't know. And maybe it's not fair. I'd be curious what other people have to say. Is it the Welsh Bogman Sports? You can even tweet FNTSY Radio and just mention ITL. Is fantasy basketball the bottom totem pole of your favorite fantasy sports? I feel like with the lack of new stuff happening, you know, that everything seems kind of the same. The players play how they are. You know, there's no amazing studs that come out of nowhere. There's always like one guy, you know, this year it was Jokic. The previous year it was CJ McCollum. There's like one guy, but the smart basketball minds have already figured that out. It's like if you don't have the picture perfect team, you're kind of done. And I think basketball went from maybe my second favorite fantasy sport to being dropped below fantasy football. Fantasy football, the weirdness of it always kind of bothered me.
It's just because it's not football season. If it was football season, you'd put football back at the bottom.
Yeah, because I'd probably be miserable, right?
I mean, the Niners aren't good, so you don't enjoy that.
I don't.
You know, football is the biggest crapshoot by far of any sport. So
I guess what I'm saying is, okay, check this out. What's going to feel better to you, winning a fantasy basketball championship or a fantasy football championship? Knowing what a crapshoot football is and knowing
I think basketball will feel better for me because disagree. well it will because
it's because I always win.
whatever I feel like basketball would be better because everyone knows everyone knows kind of how it goes. So if you took the right risk at the right time, you're kind of beating everybody. In football, you know, you just luck out and grab a free agent who winds up being a starting running back. You grab Jordan Howard off the scrap heap and you win your league. So I feel like there's more strategy and there more goes into winning basketball than winning football. Football is by far the luckiest sport. I feel like to make it less luck, we should be adding individual defensive players. I mean, look at how many positions we have in baseball. No one complains about that. But
see that, and see that's interesting. I was just going to say, yeah. I actually feel kind of the opposite. Where it's like, if you have how many times have you had a draft and you're like, man, that wasn't a great draft, you know? And then all of a sudden you lose one player in football, knowing that you could pick up a gem on the wire at any point. I kind of like live for that. That's why the waiver wire, you know, is the most exciting in football. In basketball, that just doesn't happen. It just, if you get screwed with your injuries and your guy's going down, you're not going to just like walk into a top 30 player that hell of not been drafted. That rarely happens in basketball. Maybe I'm off base here. Maybe it is kind of recency bias.
Injuries happen in basketball, and you can add guys off the wire. I mean, any sport you can add a guy off the wire, and it can make a big difference to your team. But
players sitting the whole playoffs, the whole fantasy basketball playoffs, the entire damn NBA, they're all sitting. I don't know, man. Fantasy basketball is dropping down.
Yeah, but you have problems in every sport like that, though, because you have, at the end of the year, players are hurt in football and they don't want to play their big studs anymore because of all the injury problems. And this year you have the gigantic DL problems with baseball. I feel like you're nitpicking. I feel like you're picking on basketball.
Maybe it's because there's so much of LeBron's face. You see too much of LeBron's face and you just get jaded. Am I, like, seriously?
I don't know what it is about your face, but I want to deliver one of these right in your suck hole.
Like, I'm not sure I like his face anymore.
Who are you rooting for? Are you rooting for Kevin Durant going from the Thunder to the Warriors to win his championship? Or are you voting, or are you rooting for LeBron to win another one for the land?
And the flat earthers for Kyrie Irving. Clearly, I'm going. I mean, I'm a Bay Area person. I don't claim to be. I didn't jump on any Warriors bandwagon, even though they've been successful. But, like, you know, I grew up around the Warriors. I'll pick the Warriors. Easy. Easy here. And not just because of LeBron's stupid face.
But if you don't change your face, I'm going to change it for you.
Okay. Okay.
Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, UT. Easy. But
Tristan Thompson has already got a ring.
What's the reason? So, like, okay. What's the reason for people to be excited about the playoffs? Because they're going to see two of the best teams with the best players play? Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, what are people going to root for?
They're both bad guys. You're watching. No, not all bad guys. You're watching some of the best players to ever play right now.
It's just, you know what I'm saying? There's no.
This is going to be in 15 years, dude. This is going to be the because we'll be old at that point. I mean, we're already kind of old now, but yeah. We'll be old. We'll
be like Bulls Pistons.
Will be like Pisa Pia's age, right? So, and then we'll be reflecting back on, you know,
the good old days.
Yep, I used to see Steph Curry versus LeBron all the time, but Tom Brady will still be playing quarterback for the Patriots.
Yeah. And we'll be like, there's no parity in football. Patriots win every year for 20 years because of Tom Brady. I guess what I'm saying, though, is like there isn't something outside of bandwagon fans, which, you know, these two cater to all of them. There's no one to root for here. You know, it's not like the you know, like in baseball, like remember when it was like the Royals got into the World Series and it was like, oh, it's the underdog. You kidding me? The Royals are here, you know, or the Cubbies, even though they're kind of a powerhouse, they hadn't won. I don't see a redeeming factor for anyone to root for outside of just like, you know, you're gonna watch it because this is good basketball, and I think that's fantastic. It's great for ratings. Adam Silver, you know, wrote up his blueprint perfect, and surprising, it came out just how I wanted it. I just don't see a redeeming factor outside of like, and I hate to be this person, but like, I truly think like you just tune in like the fourth quarter. You know, if you got other stuff to do, watching baseball, tune in the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter is probably going to be awesome. LeBron's going to cry and flop, and KD is going to, you know, do KD things, and Steph Curry will shoot from 27 feet, and Draymond Green is going to kick someone in the balls, and that's how the game's going to go. It's a script for every game.
But you could miss that nut kicking in the second quarter, though. What?
Yeah, that's true.
Who do you think is going to win it in how many games?
I'm going to go. I think it's got to go seven. I think this is a really tough series. I'm going to go Warriors, though.
I'll go Warriors in five.
You think they're just going to just trounce on them?
I think they're just beating the bejesus out of everybody right now. I don't think it's going to be close. I think they're clicking at the perfect time to click.
I think Durant misses a game from slipping on LeBron's tears as he cries about every damn thing. Did you even call out that reporter, by the way?
Yeah. Well, every time we lose, you're here. Like, oh, well, I'm also here every time you win.
Yeah,
so
did you notice me when I'm winning? Yeah, you obviously have bad perception on what's going on there, LeBron. Little bitch. All right. I'm getting angry. Basketball's making me angry this year. I don't know why basketball's making me so mad. But
there you go. That's a little bit of basketball talk. Curious, you know, is basketball boring to you? I mean, it's not fair because the people that love basketball most are going to say no. You almost have to be like, you're a basketball person that's been kind of turned off. I would love to know the poll, though, and football probably wins it by a long shot. But, like, what is everyone's favorite fantasy sport? Football, basketball, baseball. Put it out there. I would suspect
hockey doesn't count, the Welsh.
We're not trying to like point fingers and laugh at the lovable loser. We're trying to get some actual results here. I would suspect football wins it by 50%, but what would be curious is if they only had like a 35%, you know, football only had a slim little lead. I wonder where basketball sits.
I think that baseball people are going to be mainly the people listening right now. So I think baseball win at this point in the year. I think if you ask in October, football win by a landslide.
Okay. Well, let's figure it out. Tweet us. Let us know. Is it the Welsh Bogman Sports? Coming up, we are going to play a little game at the end of the hour called the Panic Room, where we're going to lay out a whole bunch of struggling players, and we have to get instant reactions, and it all has to fit within 60 seconds. Bogman and I will both play, and then we'll have a debrief. But in the next segment, James Anderson from RotoWire, he's going to be joining me to talk about prospects. We're going to talk about some of the top-end guys that are moving up ranks. That's one of the big things that, you know, everyone has a balance for in the prospect game. A lot of the big sites, they only do like one major update. I do updates every 2 weeks over at InThisLeague.com. If you check out the Patreon ITL Army, I've got a top 400 minor league prospect list for the fantasy game, as well as draft and international info. It's pretty comprehensive. But James and I are going to talk about a few of the big names that have had massive jumps, like Vlad Guerrero Jr., Ronald Acuna, Walker Buehler, Juan Soto, all that stuff. It's coming up. James Anderson from RotoWire in the next break. Panic Room with me and Bogman at the end of the show. It's In This League right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Welcome back to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's just me here for a little bit, but joined by James Anderson from RotoWire. We're going to be talking about prospects, so don't go anywhere. This whole segment dedicated to Major League Baseball prospects. And joining me now is James Anderson from RotoWire.
His next guest, you know,
for ITL.
And here we go.
On the prospect guest line now, he is James Anderson, one of my favorite people in the biz. Really, really good dude at what he does. You can find him on SiriusXM. You can find him at RotoWire, and you can find him on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. James, what's going down, my man?
Not much, man. Excited to talk some prospects with you. I think we're deep enough in the season where we can start making some meaningful conclusions about where guys are at.
Yeah, we had a good time in the last episode that we did where we were kind of talking about one of the things you and I will do. We're both tinkerers. We like to tinker with our rankings, and it's something I definitely do, and I think you do, that's maybe a little bit different than some of the, we'll just call them the big box sites or whatever you want to say, is that we'll have more updates, and we talk a lot more about updates than, you know, maybe once a year. And we're going to talk about that here in a second. But have you definitely felt the like rank itch and the craziness of adjusting your ranks through the first 6 weeks? Or have you tried to kind of keep yourself grounded?
Well, the readers at our site definitely expect them to be updated as often as possible. So whenever I see something, it's just not how I feel about a prospect, I try to go in there and change it right away. You know, I don't want something sitting up there in the rankings for a week or 2 weeks that actually doesn't really reflect where I'm at on a guy. So, yeah, I you know, it's a lot of work to go in. And I mean, it so much changes just in like a week. It's a lot of work to go in and kind of make them as complete as possible in kind of a real time setting. But it's definitely something I try to do for sure.
Let's talk about some of these top end players that are definitely making movement. And just a few minutes ago, we mentioned the guy we're going to talk about right now in Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who has been phenomenal. He has had a great start to the season. He's hitting 300, four homers, more walks than strikeouts, even a couple stolen bases. His on-base percentage has jumped over 400. He looks like the real deal Holyfield, and he should be moved up, kind of like what you were alluding to. You know, he won't be there probably too much longer. I think he's accomplishing a lot of what he needed to accomplish. I have moved Vlad Guerrero inside my top 10, where he was like in the early 20s to begin the season. How far and how comfortable, and talk to me about your scouting on Vlad Guerrero and where you have him from the fantasy purposes.
Yeah, so going into the year, I had him around number 15 overall. So you know, there were not a ton much higher to go than that. Right now he's sitting at number four for me. So yeah, I mean, I'm extremely high on him. I'm all aboard the Vlad Jr. bandwagon. I think he's really kind of a flawless hitting prospect. It's really hard to kind of pick apart any of his game. And I'm not concerned at all about where he ends up defensively. To me, I think third base, first base, even util, he's going to hit enough where it doesn't really matter. And third base and first base are honestly just as deep these days. So I'm not very concerned about where he ends up defensively. I love the approach as an 18-year-old in the Midwest League. He's getting to his power in games. It's a really exciting talent.
Yeah, and what's interesting, there's a couple things about him, because you answered the first question right off, which is perfect, as I was going to ask, is he a top five player? And he is for you. There's a lot of interesting stuff. I had got my reports from our head of ITL scouting, Steve Connell, had reported a couple interesting things that happened while he was out there. A, every single day he took out, not that this is a fantasy thing, but he took out tons of time for fans, just signing for every single person, just very, very involved. He also got in a little skirmish with an umpire, but it was for a pretty interesting reason. It was a Saturday before Mother's Day, and he came out with a pink bat, and the umpire said no and wouldn't let him. And he kind of like freaked out, and he looked over at John Duplante, who had pink shoes on, and he was like, what the heck? And they had this big old skirmish about it, and he couldn't get his pink bat out there. But the dude is a top end talent. Who did Vlad jump to get to five for you?
He jumped, let's see, I'll go in reverse order, like the guys that are closest to him. So I have Rafael Devers at five, who he jumped, Eloy Jimenez at six, Clint Frazier at nine, I think I had ahead of him before this season, Ahmed Rosario at 10, Gleyber Torres at 11. I started Vlad and Ronald Acuna and Austin Meadows all fairly close to each other. He jumped those guys in a hurry. So yeah, I mean, he's the only guys I have him behind are Moncada, Bellinger, and Robles right now.
Okay, so I got to ask you, we're going to talk about him, but you just sparked this in me. You just said Gleyber Torres at 11. I'm not trying to call that you're low on him. You're lower than me on him. I am absolutely aggressive on Gleyber Torres. I think he's a future star. From the fantasy purposes, I think he's not going to be a beast necessarily in one category, but I think he effectively he's at all five tool positions. So what has you at Gleyber Torres with 11, and I think you even said you have him behind Rosario?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on it. I don't see him being elite in any one category, whereas I think you're going to get 25, 30 steals out of Rosario initially. I think that Rosario might hit for either a similar average or a slightly higher average. I think Rosario's his power gets undersold a little bit. I think he's going to hit 18 to 25 homers in his peak years. I kind of think that's where Torres is. I think they're going to be similar in their peak years in terms of power, batting average, and I give Rosario the speed edge.
Okay, that's really interesting. All right, let's move to the next player, and you've said his name. Ronald Acuna has been the talk of the town. He was like a preseason darling for everybody, and, you know, rightfully so. He's got a lot of the great tools. 19-year-old, hitting 322 across multiple levels, still hitting 432 since his call up to AA, but, you know, that's obviously tapering down. He's got a strikeout thing that's following him, but he has been one of the most kind of sought after and prolific prospects so far this season. I had him high coming into the season. He was top 50. I ask you, is Ronald Acuna a top 30 player moving forward in your prospect ranks?
I mean, I had him top 20 coming into the year, and I still have him in the low teens. So yeah, I mean, I guess I'm sort of surprised by the strikeout issues he ran into at high A. But I'm also a little surprised by how successful he's been as a base stealer. And I think to me he's a five category guy eventually. I was surprised when they promoted him to double A, but so far so good. And I mean, he's actually performed better there than he was at high A.
What's your range of Acuna? Who are a couple guys behind and a couple guys above? We had this, and I actually be interested in your take as well, so it's a two-parter question. A couple weeks back, we had a question about Corey Ray, who I know you were very aggressive on. I believe he was like your number one guy versus Ronald Acuna, and that was really, really tough for me. What side do you sit on that one? And then where does like Acuna, who are the guys below him and behind him?
He's about 20, no, he's about 18 spots ahead of Corey Ray for me. He's right in front of Austin Meadows. He's right behind Lewis Brinson. He's I've got Nick Senzel and Brendan Rodgers closely behind him, and I've got Torres and Rosario closely in front of him. So, I mean, you can't really go wrong with any of those guys. I don't want to say that because I have Acuna ahead of a guy like Nick Senzel, I don't like Nick Senzel. And, you know, it's just these guys are all, to me, after you get past, like, Rafael Devers and Eloy Jimenez, I think there's a run of about 15 guys where I think you could realistically put them in just about any order. So I have Acuna 13th overall. There's three or four guys ahead of him, three or four guys behind him that I could see a case for moving ahead of him or moving back behind him. But I mean, he's definitely special.
And one thing I want to comment on is I really like actually how you do have him placed, because when you're starting fresh, I do, and I could be wrong about this, but I think there could be a stigma of danger of taking Ronald. Like if Ronald Acuna, you just saw as 13 coming into this season fresh, that could be a little bit risky taking him over. There's a lot of good names that are in that spot. But at this point in the season, I think that's it. I think he is a top 25, even a top 20 player that you could think acquisitional wise, you know, because you can have a balance to your team. And when someone says, do you like Acuna? Do you like Ray more? It's like, well, what's the whole scope of your team? You know, are you, how far away are you? How are you doing in your majors? What does your talent look like in your minors? Acuna has the higher ceiling. Corey Ray was kind of the more floor safer guy.
Oh, also, I think, you know, when you kind of lay it out like that, if you go into the year, like say you're doing a draft from scratch dynasty league, if you go into the year with Acuna and you're contending, I think you can get more from, there's going to be an owner or two in your league that are just going to be all aboard based on his hot start to the season, his early promotion. I think you could get a ton from somebody if you wanted to flip him and win now move. Whereas, you know, a guy like Corey Ray, I still like a lot long term, but you know, he's off to a slower start. He's not hitting lefties at all. I think that you would just have a hard time getting more for Corey Ray than you would Acuna.
Let's go to number three on the top end moving up players. And once I get through these, or top moving up or down players, and I'm going to open it up for you to bring any other guys in. But number three on this list is Juan Soto. Juan Soto, who I feel kind of similarly to Ronald Acuna, really took on coming into this season, you know, prior to the season starting. 6'1", 185, 18-year-old, hitting .360, three homers, one stolen base, also more walks and strikeouts, just like Vlad Guerrero Jr. He has definitely caught everybody's attention. Juan Soto, top 50 player for you.
Yeah, I have him at 21, and I opened the year with him in the 30s, I think. Was pretty aggressive on him. I mean, I like to go for upside guys and guys that I think can just blow up in the early going over some of the guys that are still stuck at AAA or even AA that maybe don't have that same sort of, you know, the tools don't just jump out to you the way they do with a guy like Soto. So I've moved him up about 15 spots. Is he back? Is he back from that injury? I know that
he's still on the DL, I believe.
Missed a couple. All right. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see him get back and see what he can do. I think it's going to be fascinating to me when the Nationals are looking to add at the deadline, whether or not they make him available, because I don't think I would unless you're really talking about a major difference maker for the bullpen that you have years of control under. And I think a lot of people that aren't as into this stuff as you and I are probably look at a guy like Soto and say, oh, well, they'll just flip him at the deadline. I mean, like, this is a potential cleanup hitting outfielder on a first division team. I would be hesitant to move him if I was them.
You know, it actually, you know, you just sparked in my brain too. This reminds me of that situation in the preseason where Jose Quintana was being made available. And a lot of people were saying, well, it's going to take Kyle Tucker and Francis Marte. And a lot of people were like, okay, we'll just do it. You got to get your starter when you're in a pennant race. And I think, I mean, I know I did, and I imagine you probably had some hesitation of like, well, Kyle Tucker could be special. You got to make that trade without him. And think of how happy the Astros are that they didn't go and move a potential middle of the order special bat. And I agree. I think Juan Soto, though the skills are a bit different, is of the same type of ilk of this could be a special bat.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm right there with you on Tucker. I was all for the Astros unloading, like, say if it took Martes and Paulino and, you know, maybe a third guy for Quintana, I would have been fine with that. But yeah, to me, Tucker's not a guy you include in that deal. I started with him in my top 20 to open the year. I have him all the way up to number 7. I mean, I'm just really impressed by what he's doing at high A. I mean, we know that he can run. We know that, you know, that speed's probably going to tick down eventually. I'm surprised, and we all knew that the power was going to come on too. I'm sort of surprised how quickly that power has come on. I mean, he's just destroying the ball at high A right now. I'm really excited about what he's doing.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, number four here, Walker Buehler. Walker Buehler has been one of the more polarizing prospects. I know one of the big things that ended up happening in the preseason, and it's always fun when this happens, was Keith Law opened up with Walker Buehler like in the 40s. And a lot of people were like, wow, that's a really big jump. But, you know, I think it was insightful so far. 24 innings pitched, 39 strikeouts, no homers, only 7 walks. Already been moved up to Double A. There's lots of rumors and speculation that the Dodgers are essentially prepping Walker Buehler to get innings with the actual Dodgers, you know, the major league team this season, probably in a bullpen role, I would imagine. He's coming off of a major injury last season. Where does Walker Buehler sit for you? And the main question here is he a top 10 starting pitcher as far as pitching prospects go?
I have him ranked at 42 overall, and I opened the year with him, I think, in the 80s. So he's definitely been a big riser. You know, you hear about the potential for 3+ pitches, but I'm always a little hesitant with guys like that where, you know, kind of a James Caprillion type of thing where we just haven't seen them put the innings together at all. So it's sort of hard to get too excited, but it's really hard to argue with what he's done this year. I actually have him 7th among pitching prospects. So yeah, I do have him in the top 10.
All right. I love it. He's one of my favorite pitching prospects too. It's really fun. I was watching a video of him and he had this, I just got this like almost Tim Lincecum vibe from just his body and the pitching style. He doesn't do the wind up or anything like that, but I just got this early young Tim Lincecum vibe watching Walker Buehler, and he might be, I feel like end of season, he's going to easily be teetering like top 5 starting pitcher as long as he doesn't have any major setbacks or any injuries. That sound about right?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if he does kind of continue on that track you were talking about where we might see him in the big league bullpen, you know, putting up a monster K rate against big leaguers this season towards the end of the year. I mean, that would definitely help boost his stock.
All right, last one on the top end moving, but this time I want to talk about someone that's moving down. And we're going to talk about biggest ranked jumpers and fallers, but they don't necessarily have to be of the top end value. This is a player that I'm very curious to see where you sit on him. I was down on him from the Arizona Fall League. That's always not the most fair assessment to have because a lot of these guys could be kind of worn down. But from the season totals to who I saw personally, big hustle player. He's definitely got muscle. He's got speed. He's a try hard guy, but he really struggled in the Arizona Fall Leagues. And the player I'm talking about is Tyler O'Neill with the Seattle Mariners, a very, very popular, like top 50 player coming into this season amongst ranks, which is rightfully so. MLB.com had him at 31. He's hitting 207 with 44 strikeouts over 140 innings, only 3 homers in AAA. He's only 21 years old, so he's still young, but is Tyler O'Neill a top 50 fantasy prospect?
No, I coming into the year, I was kind of right there with the masses, I guess. I had him in my top 50. I think I had him in the low 40s, and I've moved him all the way down to 80 overall. So I am concerned that the age factor you point out is definitely huge. You know, a guy that's 21 years old getting a triple A, I mean, that's an accomplishment in itself. But, you know, I think we're just looking at one of those classic really low batting average sluggers where it's not certain that they're going to hit for a high enough average, get on base enough to where a big league team is going to give them everyday at bats.
Yeah, I just struggled with him, and I know a lot of people didn't necessarily agree with me, and it doesn't mean that this is the story on him, 21 years old. There's still lots of time to improve, but just the stats did not equate to the player I saw, and we're seeing some major adjustments happen to him this year. So, okay, so let me just throw it out real quick because I'm in agreement. He's not a top 50 player. If you think he could possibly turn this around, would he be a player you would look to buy low on, or are you low enough on him that you just try to kind of sell now? Like maybe you go take a player that's ranked a decent amount lower, but that has a much higher upside. Would you move him? Because he still has name value.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on your league and if there is somebody in your league who's still a pretty big believer. To me, I'd imagine I would just end up kind of sitting on him because I think it would be tough to get enough value to where I wouldn't want to just wait this out and see what he does. But I'm not looking to buy low on him. I think there are some guys out there that I would be looking to buy low on for sure. But, you know, I'm a little concerned. I'm not trying to buy in, especially if the person that has him still wants kind of close to the sticker price that we had before the season.
He's James Anderson from RotoWire. James,
tell people where they can find you, your work over at RotoWire. What have you recently done? What's coming down the pike, as well as the SiriusXM show?
Yeah, we have the top 400 prospect rankings for Dynasty Leagues. We do a team top 20s for Dynasty Leagues. That's all at RotoWire. You can go to RotoWire.com/free for a free 10-day trial. You don't need a credit card to get that. Been kind of just doing a tour each week of a league. This past week, I profiled the guys in the Carolina League that are really pressing so far, so you can check that out. And then on Twitter, at RealJRAnderson, that's the best place to find all the links I tweet out.
I have too much fun doing this with you. Someday, you and I are just going to have to do a whole prospect thing. We're going to have to start a whole prospect thing ourselves, because I have too much fun doing this with you and conversationally, I think. And I think people enjoy it. So as much as I can steal all of your personal time, I'm probably going to try to do that.
No, I mean, I love doing it too. I mean, we're kind of cut from the same cloth when it comes to just going really deep on these prospects and really trying to keep our lists up to date. So, I mean, I definitely appreciate talking with you whenever I can.
All right. Appreciate it, man. Hope to get you back on soon. All right, Bogman, what did you think? What did you think about that talk?
I thought it was great. I specifically love the breakdown of Walker Buehler's song, Drop 'Em Out.
Oh, Walker. Oh, would that be Walker Buehler Jr. and Walker Wheeler Jr.?
Walker Wheeler.
Drop them out. Let me see them.
I get those guys confused. So.
Yeah. It's funny because Walker Wheeler Jr., fantastic. Can't probably play lyrics to his songs for more than about 10 seconds.
No, not on this network, for sure.
All right. Well, on this network, we got one more segment. Bogman and I, we are going to be playing Panic Room. Coming up on the other side of this break, Bogman is the Welsh on In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Welcome back. Final segment of In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in. If you want to check out more, go to InThisLeague.com. That is our website. You can find links to get some shirts, get some badass shirts like the Pitch Me Outside or the ITL baseball logo. You can find out about the ITL Army, where if you would like to join up with a hardcore community of fantasy likes just like yourself, you can do that. And you're also supporting Bogman and I as we do shows on almost every single fantasy sport. We've got draft coverage for the NFL. We've got prospect coverage that I do at Prospect One. And you get secret shows on the ITL Army. You get all of that nonsense. You get secret shows, you get ranks, you get a bunch of extra perks, and we would love to have you. So consider going checking us out at InThisLeague.com. Bogman, are you ready to play the Panic Room?
Let's do it.
So what we've done here is we've taken 10 players apiece. We have 60 seconds to get through these 10 players. Bogman, I have not seen his list. He has not seen my list. We're going to lay them out, and you have got to give an actual response. Now, obviously, you don't want to just be like, you know, yes, no. I mean, I suppose you can, but you are susceptible then to being dumb and saying dumb things. So if I just throw out Chris Bryant, you're like, yes, you know, you might have to think about it. You want to give the proper answer. So
well,
each of us are going to go.
If you throw out Chris Bryant, I'll just say yes.
Yeah, that you're worried about him? This is a panic
room. I'm not worried about him.
Okay. Well, see, you already didn't.
I already don't understand the game. Is Eric Thames in this? He must be. I don't get it.
I don't know. Yes or no. So we'll play this and see if the other person does not make it. Who should go first?
I'll read to you first.
Okay. You're going to read to me first. I'm on the hot seat for the panic room.
Everybody panic!
All hitters, the Welsh. E5 to start. Edwin Encarnacion. 207 at that now.
I'm not worried about E5.
Trevor Story hitting 185. K rate is 37.5%.
I am worried about Trevor Story. Yes, yes.
Your boy, Ronan Odor, 200 batting average, 211 BABIP.
This is so hard. No, not worried.
More of your boy, Kyle Schwarber, 187 batting average.
No, very encouraged with the home run. He's upped all his stuff. Keep going. Go. I got 30 seconds.
Frazier, 176.
Yes, worried. How many
Jose
more do I
Batista,
have?
Five.
No.
Aegon.
Very worried. Bellinger is going to affect him. 15
Jock
seconds.
Peterson. Jock Peterson, 216.
Yes.
Napoli.
No. 5 seconds.
Curtis Granderson, 153.
Yes, worried about him.
Oh. They're all batting averages, by the way.
Those are all batting averages.
I have some extras in case... You know, we doubled up, but
it's okay if we double up, though, because our opinions aren't necessarily the same. All right. Bogman, are you ready to play your round of the panic room?
Yes, I'm ready.
Ah!
First up on the panic room, Danny Salazar.
Worried.
Very okay. Number two on the panic room, E5 with only two hits in his last eight games.
He'll hit home runs.
You're not at all. No. That Ian Happ will never smile.
I'm worried about that.
Better Ian this year, Snell or Happ?
Oh, Happ.
All right, that was one question. Jose Peraza hitting 250. He's only got three stolen bases with no homers in the last 30 days.
Yeah, I'm worried about it.
Kevin Pillar not being one overall over the last month.
That worries me so much.
I know it does. Andrew McCutchen hitting 183 the last 30 days.
I feel like he's going to be better. I'm worried.
Okay. That Avril Lavigne really died in 2013, and a clone has been playing her for 14 years. 10
Who
seconds.
Cares?
Are you worried? You got to answer.
I'm not worried.
Okay, that Goldie is too good.
Too good. I'm worried about that because he is too healthy, Lois. Too healthy. Did I get them all?
You won. We both won. We got it inside the panic room. That is amazing. That was down to the wire there. Hey, you not care about the Avril Lavigne stuff?
I don't know what we're talking about.
Oh my God! You don't know? You didn't hear the thing with the? I'm not going.
I'm an old, out of touch man. What happened to Avril Lavigne? Is she dead?
No, you didn't hear the conspiracy.
Oh, more Bugman. Conspiracy
they said,
theories.
Okay, this is the TLDR.
I have a conspiracy theory about conspiracy theories.
Okay, well, but this is the conspiracy theory real quick. Let me just get it out. That they say in 2003, a body double was hired to work for her because she didn't like working in public. Then she killed herself, and then the record label kept the body double as her, and all of her music has changed, and this Melissa whatever, they haven't appeared in the same place. So
I don't.
Stay woke.
About Avril Lavigne.
Okay. Well, I mean, we got a hard time saying if you were worried or not.
Yeah, I'm not because I don't care. Okay. Even a little bit. Yeah. Avril Lavigne does not register to me. Like, you know, I mean, if she'd kick it down, I'd take it, you know, not as a corpse.
Yeah, she was married to Chad Kroeger from Nickelback.
I knew she married some I didn't know who it was. This
is
all
music.
You
don't like music. Yeah, you don't like music.
This is all music stuff. Why are we going over music stuff with me?
I don't know. It's a great, great question. I should have Spore on the episode if he didn't big time me all the time. I'd have him on and we could talk music. So. All right.
He's never going to hear the end of it. Spore, answer an email.
answer an email. All right, so let's regroup before we get into news and notes. Is there anything else you want to cover in the worried, not worried? You kind of had me on some of these.
All right, so E5 here. In all of his 30-plus homer seasons, he had a home run to fly ball ratio of at least 17.6%. This season, it's 15.6%, and his K rate is 28.4%. His career is 16.5%. I'm still not worried because I think he's going to hit a bunch of homers and be okay, but I don't think he's going to return value. So it really kind of depends on what do you mean as far as panic. Like, is he going to give me nothing? Is he going to bottom out? Like, I feel like Trevor Story could bottom out. You know, he could be in AAA.
Yeah, but I mean, he's hurt. He's hurt. Yeah.
Well, he's hurt now, of course. Everyone's on the disabled.
I don't want to be too hacky about it to be like, he's a second half player and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, he is. He's going to get better. I agree that, like, he's not going to be.
What's an acceptable stat line after right now he's hitting 207 with six homers, 14 runs, and 14 RBI?
I think he could still be a 240. 25 to 30 homer guy.
I think he's at least going to hit 30 homers.
Yeah, I do. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think he's a great buy to me right now. This is a player that I want to buy. If you own him, you're really in a pickle situation because I don't really think it's worth selling him. I'd rather hold on to him if you own him, but you kind of got to deal with that. Like, you probably took him in the second round and it didn't pay off for you. What did you say about Jose Peraza? I don't remember in the panic room. Were you worried?
I think I'm a little worried about Peraza just because anytime a one-trick pony type of guy like Peraza or Billy Hamilton or any of those speedsters are not hitting their weight, it's bad, dude.
Yeah.
You know, what do you say? He had three hits in the last 2 weeks or something?
Yeah, just not good. He's hitting like 250. He's got no homers. It's really bad. You want to know who
Agon has no homers? I know he's on the disabled list, but he had zero homers in 103 plate appearances before that.
Yeah, he's been garbage. You know what the one that I'm really perturbed about is Danny Salazar. Last week I was doing a whole bunch of just digging into his stats because he's having a really garbage year. And you and me had this conversation where it was like, how much do these guys ever go look at their advanced stats? Because like one thing you can immediately see when you look at his stuff is he is throwing – because his velocity is not down. That's the thing everyone wants to go to with players. Like, oh, look at Greinke. Look at Harvey.
His velocity's up from last year. He's actually has the highest velocity he's thrown his fastball since 2013. But the dude is throwing his changeup almost like 15% more than he is throwing it last year. He's actually throwing, he is throwing his changeup 13% more than he's ever done in his career. His slider is down by 2%. His fastball is down by 14%, and his changeup is up by 15%. So obviously, I don't know if the changeup is working that much. We should probably look at, you know, like contact percentages on pitches, but like, these seem like logical things. Then you go and look, he's actually generating some more swing. The swing percentage is up. He's not getting as much swing outside of the zone, and people are getting him on the inside. I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. Danny Salazar, I'm looking at this guy, and I'm like, these look like some easy fixes. He still keeps getting mashed, and I'm worried about it. I'm worried why he's not making adjustments, and I'm worried that Ian Happ is never going to smile.
Right, I think like a guy like Trevor Story, right now his BABIP is .246. Last season was .343, so he's almost 100 points off. And it was never below .313 in the minors, though. So I feel like he must have been playing hurt. Like the same kind of deal with Odor. Like I don't think he's playing hurt or anything, but his BABIP is .211. And it wasn't like he was killing it last year. It was .297. But his soft contact is up, his medium contact is down, and his hard contact is the same. So it's just, you know, he's making bad contact with the ball right now. Schwarber's a really weird one. His BABIP is down to .225. His swinging strike rate is down from 14.4 to 9.8. His contact rate is up 57.3 to 67.7 on O contact.
Nerd!
Z is 74.5 to 82%. His soft contact is up, though. Like these guys are and Todd Frazier is another guy, soft contact up. Joey Batts, his soft contact is way down, but his hard contact is way down. His medium contact is up to 51%, career 47.9, last year 37.7%.
Let me hone in here, because you could rattle off nerd all night long. Well, no, I'm just saying. I mean, we could keep rattling off nerd stuff. But I don't think it's helping or doing that much. But I want to say, is, and they're all great points. What do you do at this stage of the season with your nerd information? What do you do when you're genuinely worried about the players? And especially if these guys are struggling, you don't have the advantage of selling high at this point. So are you going to, if you are genuinely worried about that player, are you just going to dump him to get what you can get?
Danny
Salazar. What are you doing with Danny Salazar?
I'm trying to get 75 cents on the dollar. Okay. Like it's just not in the cards for him this year. You know, it's tough because a lot of these guys I'm not worried about. Like I'm not really not worried about Jock. I'm not too worried about Jose Bautista. Like I think he'll come around, even though like it's going to be a bad year. Like you can tell that already, but I think he's going to come around. I'm kind of not sure about Todd Frazier. I think I am worried about Todd Frazier.
You should be very worried about Todd Frazier.
Schwarber, I'm not too worried about because, like I said, with all the contact rate is up, that ball's going to start flying out soon. I think Odor and Story are both like the BABIP is so bad it's got to turn around.
Yeah. Well, like so, I said, I mean, I know who you're worried about. We talked about who you're worried about, but it's just what are you doing? That. Is it all subjective?
It's not that – well, you can't – what I'm saying is like for Odor and Schwarber, guys that I think that are coming around, I can't move them. I can't move on from them. I can't quit them. The Welsh. I can't do it. I wish I could. I can't do it. But guys like Curtis Granderson, he's gone. He's done.
Yeah,
I feel like I can be done with some of these young guys like Swanson and Renfro and Schimpf. I think I can be done with those guys.
Okay. Well, that's a good take. I like hearing that. All right. It just, you know, when we're in the panic room, the discussion is much different than the first panic room we did because we're now like, you know.
Well, I said that magical date, you know, May 15th.
Yeah, man.
And we're past that.
Yeah, we're there. We're there where you can really start cutting bait and you got to hit a hard line because if E5 doesn't turn it around, you're done. You're cooked. You're not getting garbage for him. You're getting Ryan Schimpf. So you need to make those decisions, ones I'm not worried about. All right, that is going to do it. That is your show for In This League. It's Bogman and the Welsh coming at you hard every single week with a whole bunch of craziness, whether we are talking about baseball, football, basketball, or we're doing some of our secret comedy shows where Bogman is doing impressions. Bogman, maybe we should play this to close the show. A couple months ago, we did a bit where we call it Bogpressions,
where Bogman, I came up with this idea where I'd find lyrics to a song and Bogman would have to sing the song doing different impressions that he does. Very talented Scott Bogman. Just so happens the first one we ever did, pretty talented. I mean, I only do Miller Wild. That's all I can do. And you got a lot more. Just so happens when we did this many months ago, I picked Soundgarden's Black Hole Sun. And we just recently lost Chris Cornell. Very sad. You know, and probably everyone listening to this, whether you're if you're like early 30s, late 20s or into your 40s, 50s, you probably grew up knowing Chris Cornell. And we did this bit. So I thought you would maybe enjoy it. Let's finish out the show. It is Bogman in the Bogpressions in celebration of.